This is the Canadian Taxpayers Federation podcast, where we are fighting for lower taxes, less waste, and more accountability from government. My name is Chris Sims. I'm the Alberta director for the CTF. My two good friends, Franco Terrazano, he's the federal director, and Ryan Thorpe, he's our investigative journalist. Let not the screens deceive you. They're actually very close together. They're at our Ottawa embassy there in the capital. Guys, it was a really neat week because you got to do something that a lot of Canadians, I think, find interesting, but they don't quite know the mechanics of it. Namely, Franco, you were under siege for about half an hour, 40 minutes or so in a parliamentary committee. Now, just to get into a little bit of the background of it. So we've got the House of Commons. That's where all the MPs sit most of the time. That's where you see question period. They got the green carpeting. But around that room and in other rooms and other buildings, there are committees. And they roll on all the time. Even when the House isn't sitting sometimes, you'll have MPs still back at committee. In the United States, you often see these as like congressional hearings. And it's given like wide coverage on things like CNN, right? In Canada, it's interesting because they're just as powerful. They have power of subpoena. You're essentially under oath. It's all fully translated. It's all recorded, all that jazz, but not a lot of people pay attention to it. So Franco and Ryan, you guys went in there together. And I have to say, Franco, you did an outstanding job.
Thank you.
Great job. And so watching the footage was really cool. I was watching it live. And if you can see some of the clips, you can see Ryan's like shoulder and elbow there. Yeah. So Franco's walk us through, or Ryan, walk us through, what was this committee about, technically speaking? And then why would the Taxpayers Federation have to be there? Because according to what I was reading in the bill, a lot of it was dealing with timing of an election and where we can put polling stations and stuff like that. It didn't feel like an exact fit right off the bat for CTF. So why were we there?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And like you and a lot of your listeners will remember this, but the government has brought in some legislation to make changes to Canada's Election Act, right? And to your point, there's a lot of stuff in there that doesn't directly relate to taxpayers per se, but there's one little small little nugget that actually has huge implications for Canadian taxpayers and for some of those politicians on the Hill. And what the government is doing is that it's proposing through this legislation to delay the next election by 1 week, right? So the next scheduled election is October 20th, 2025. And this bill would push back that next scheduled election to October 27th, 2025. Now, why does that have taxpayer implications? Because it just so happens that 80 members of parliament aren't eligible for their fat taxpayer-funded lifetime pensions until the day after the next scheduled election. So by pushing the election back by 1 week, what the government is doing is making up to 80 MPs eligible for a taxpayer-funded pension that they don't deserve. And those taxpayer-funded pensions could cost taxpayers up to $120 million, okay? Now, folks, think about how crazy this is for a second. You'll have a number of those MPs who will have barely served for 6 years and will still be taking a taxpayer-funded pension of more than $2 million. So barely serving for 6 years, still taking a taxpayer-funded pension of $2 million for those, some of those MPs. So right when we found out that the government was trying to do this, we were sounding the alarm on this. We've been hammering the government. Our supporters have been hammering the government. And that's why we were in committee to essentially say two things. Like, look, if you want to move the next scheduled election to avoid a religious holiday, as they claim, okay, fine. But then there's two simple solutions, right? Number one, make the election earlier. Number two, make the pension eligibility date later.
Yeah, I don't think for anyone with a shred of common sense that this passes the sniff test of, oh, too bad. We need to make the election 1 week later. Why? Diwali? No, guys, come on. Have it earlier. Why not have it earlier if you're so worried about impeding a religious holiday? But they don't want to. Why? Oh, I don't know. Might be because they're going to get a big fat pension. And I find that part insulting to people's intelligence. You know, just come right out and say it. If you think that you've been busting your butt all this time and you really think you deserve the pension, make that argument. But they won't. They won't. because they just want to be entitled to it and try to slip it under the carpet. Ryan, you were in the room. So was this in, take us behind the scenes a little bit and set it for us. Was this in West Block? Was it near the House of Commons? Like, where is it? What happened in there?
It was in West Block, so it is near the House of Commons. But to just, I guess, kind of take our listeners behind the scenes a little bit, it was at the tail end of the week before when we actually got the invitation to go to committee. And at that point, you know, I think it's fair to say, I don't want to tell any tales out of school here. Stress levels in the office maybe go up a little bit. You know, it's a lot of pressure. So it was kind of all hands on deck. There was a number of us helping Franco behind the scenes, you know, putting together research. What exactly is in this bill? As you mentioned, there's a lot of elements to it that aren't directly taxpayer related, but we still got to make sure we know what that's about. And then there was a lot of preparation that went into, okay, what kinds of questions is Franco likely to get at this committee appearance? And we even grilled him for about 40 minutes the one night in terms of questions he might get, how is he going to answer them, things like that. So there's a lot of work that went into it beforehand. And then on the day in question, we head over to West Block, and Franco crushed it. I mean, our viewers will get to see some of that in a little bit, but honestly, I thought it went about as good as it could have.
Yeah, I couldn't help it. So I'm a horsey person. At least I grew up that way. And if you watch horseback racing, you'll notice that the horse that's actually racing is like jumping up and down, like all 4 feet, getting ready to get into the chutes to go. And there's always this calm horse friend next to that horse. Same thing in barrel racing or any kind of rodeo. If you watch carefully, there's the actual racehorse that's doing the thing. And next to that horse is this calm stable horse is like, calm down, dude. So Ryan, I think you played that role in this case. And to be fair, we tried our best really to trip him up in the practices. And it's really similar to debate prep. Some people might have noticed that something might have happened in the United States recently that included big debates. Well, candidates always do like a storm session beforehand where their friends and their staff hit them with as hard a question as you possibly can dream up. And we did that. And I don't think we ruffled you, Franco. Did you feel well prepped?
I did. And like, you know, these things are always a little bit nerve-wracking for a couple reasons. Number one, like they are important, right? You can actually make some big policy changes and save taxpayers a bunch of money this way. So like the stakes are high in the sense that you could actually save some taxpayers money if you go in there and you put on a good performance and you hold those politicians' feet to the fire. Number two, you know, my goal of going into committee was essentially to actually just give our people a voice, right? Like we correspond with our people all the time, whether it's just looking at comments on YouTube or direct emails that we get back and forth with our supporters. And a lot of times I hear from people saying like, you know, what can I do? You know, I feel like I don't have a voice. So, you know, not to put any more weight on this than what it is, but you know, I did want to give our people a voice, feel like they have somebody who's in Ottawa calling out their, BS, so to speak, and really ready to stick it to the politicians. But the third reason that I was, you know, kind of feeling a little bit nervous might not be the right word, but some anxious energy is because, like, look, I was essentially going in there saying, you're overpaid, mm-hmm. implying that, like, there's some people there who are greedy and are only trying to move the election a week so that they can get lifetime taxpayer funded pension. So, you know, I was there and I was pretty sure that everything I was going to say was going to tick these people off, right? I was not there to make any friends and I knew it was going to be kind of a hostile environment. And one of the reasons is because, like, look, on these committee appearances, as you'll see, we're going to play the full committee appearance of me going back and forth with these MPs. But like in some cases, you'll notice that the MPs didn't want to ask me about the pensions, right? They didn't want to talk about their pensions. They didn't want to talk about the fact that the government is moving the election to give dozens of MPs who don't deserve them a pension. So what I knew was going to happen is I knew they're going to try to sling mud at me. Or mm-hmm. sling mud at the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, or try to, you know, imply things about us, our supporters, and our organization that just aren't correct. So, And the reason is like, they don't want to talk about their pensions. They don't want to talk about how much money they get made or they get paid. So they want to devalue the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. And because I have so much pride in our organization and our supporters and the work we do, I knew that I had to be prepared for when those MPs inevitably slung some mud at me.
Yeah. And you did that well. Ryan, I'll let you jump in here in a second. But if I can just say, that's something that bothers me the most when it comes from these members of parliament, is this ridiculous, and I'll just get right into it, this ridiculous idea that we're somehow, I don't know, some funded puppet of Putin or something ridiculous. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation has been around since 1990, okay? Since before the internet was a thing. Our magazine started as a newsletter that had staples in it, okay? Because average, hardworking, everyday, ordinary Canadians were fed up with getting overtaxed and worked to death. They're sick of it. And you know what? We've been a very successful advocacy organization. And you know what's pathetic? Is that members of parliament who are elected by people in their constituents, okay? By the smelly masses in their constituents. These are not dukes, okay? These are not princes, okay? They're paid baseline $200,000 a year. Pretty much every expense you can imagine is usually covered for them, including like their housing and their food. They don't have to pay their heat bill when they're in cabinet. You know what I mean? Lots of travel, pretty plum job. Okay. And for them to actually not be able to believe that there are hundreds of thousands of ordinary, hardworking Canadians that are sick of them, overtaxing them and wasting their money is would be laughable if it weren't so frustrating. But you handled those questions with calm. Like you just were unflappable. Did you get some of that hostility, Ryan? Were you sensing some of that coming off of these entitled members of parliament who wanted to talk about everything, I'll point out, other than what Franco was pointing out?
Yeah, there was definitely a bit of that. Franco did very good staying on message and dragging them back to the point that they were here to talk about. But the one thing I would say is that the fact that the CTF does get, you know, mud thrown at it, like Franco said, in settings like that, that speaks to the effectiveness of the organization. If the Canadian Taxpayers Federation wasn't effective at advocating for taxpayers, for giving a voice to hundreds of thousands of Canadian taxpayers, they wouldn't be flinging mud. They wouldn't be trying to undermine us because the CTF wouldn't matter. But that's clearly just not the case, which is why Franco did get some of those attacks at the committee meeting, which our viewers will get a sense of when we cut to the clips. But we also got good outcomes there. Like I said originally, I think this went better than certainly I had thought it even might. I don't think it could have went better for the CTF and for our supporters. So Franco, do you want to get in a bit
yeah.
in terms of what the outcomes were that day?
Yeah, so like, honestly, I've never seen anything happen like this, right? A lot of times you go in there and like, you'll get some victories, but it's down the road. But we got some victories while in committee, and I can't believe that. But before, you know, there was actually one Liberal MP who actually said that, quote, they get many emails from our Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters, quote, pretty prolific in reaching out to elected officials. So a Liberal MP, your pressure, folks, is clearly working. That a Liberal MP even admitted that they're getting tons of emails, tons of pressures from our Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters. So keep up the good job, everyone out there who's keeping keeping those politicians honest and putting pressure on them. But let's talk about the outcomes, right? I wasn't expecting this at all. So we already knew that the Conservatives were against the government's attempt to delay the election to secure dozens of dozens of politicians a pension they don't deserve. The NDP also confirmed at committee that they are against this and that they're going to put in a motion to not delay the election to give additional politicians a pension. The Bloc also at committee indicated that they are against this. So all the opposition parties are like, no, we're against this. And really, that's because of the pressure that you folks, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation supporters, have been doing. But get this, folks. At the end of the committee, a Liberal member of parliament, Sherry Romanato, she confirmed that she would vote against her own government's attempt to delay the election. A Liberal member of parliament at that committee that we were at confirmed that she would vote against the government's own attempt to delay the election. Like, I could not believe when I heard that, like, we almost had to double check that she in fact did say that.
And we, you know, did. Our group chat lit up. It's like, did she just say that? Yes, she did.
Yeah. So that's a huge win, even at committee, that you had not only the opposition parties against it, but a Liberal member of parliament saying she would vote against the government's own bill, at least that portion of it. And then, like, that just goes to show the pressure that our supporters have been putting on all these different MPs. It's really crazy. And then a couple days after my committee appearance, the Minister of Democratic Institutions, who oversees this legislation, Dominic LeBlanc, he was in committee. And he even said, like, you know what, like, if the committee makes amendments to not delay the election, then he would happily respect the will of the committee. So, folks, like, the game isn't over yet. But if we can keep up the pressure on the government, on these politicians, I think we're going to get a huge win and stop the pension grab that this government tried to bring in.
That is just huge. Did you want me to let people watch you now in all of your glory in committee?
Yeah, let's, folks, enjoy. You'll see my 5-minute opening speech, and then you'll see all the back and forth, all the fun that that we had with those members of parliament there.
My name is Franco Terrazano. I'm with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and I'm here to give a voice to hundreds of thousands of Canadians who don't want you to delay the next election and stick taxpayers with the bill for millions in pensions for members of Parliament. The government's proposal to delay the election by 1 week would give taxpayer-funded pensions to up to 80 MPs who would otherwise not qualify. That's up to $120 million in pensions for those politicians. Some of those politicians will have served for barely 6 years and receive more than $2 million in pensions. 6 years, $2 million in taxpayer-funded pensions. There are two simple things the government could do to avoid sticking ordinary Canadians with a huge bill for taxpayer-funded pensions for dozens of politicians who don't deserve them. Number one, make the election earlier. There are about 350 days between now and the next scheduled election of October 20th, 2025. I have confidence that at least one of the 336 members of parliament and 400,000 federal government bureaucrats can figure out one of those 350 days to hold the election. Number two, if somehow not a single MP or bureaucrat can figure out one of the 350 days between now and next October, then change the pension eligibility date so it's after the next election. Making taxpayers pay tens of millions of dollars so dozens of extra politicians can take a pension is unacceptable. Moving the election by just 1 week will mean up to 80 MPs will receive a pension they shouldn't. Those pensions will total up to $120 million. But even if the final cost to taxpayers is half of that, say $60 million, think of the money you're taking out of people's pockets and think about how that conversation is going to go the next time you're knocking on your voters' doors. $60 million is a year's worth of groceries for 3,000 families. Are you going to look your voters in the eye and tell them pensions for politicians are more important than food for families? $60 million is 4,000 families' income tax bills. Are you going to look your voters in the eye and tell them pensions for politicians are more important than cutting taxes for their entire neighborhood? If you're not willing to have that conversation, you shouldn't be willing to give dozens of extra politicians a pension. If you do change the date of an election to give dozens of politicians a pension, think of what you're doing. You're taking more money out of the pockets of your voters. You're taking more money out of the pockets of your local businesses. You're taking more money out of the pockets of the plumbers, paramedics, pilots, and police officers in your communities. And you're giving their money to highly paid politicians in Ottawa who shouldn't qualify for that pension. Politicians whose yearly salary is already between $200,000 and $300,000. Politicians who take a pay raise every single year. Politicians who already get a $100,000 severance and a $15,000 transition allowance. I know, as I'm sure you do too, that there are countless Canadians who are losing sleep worried about the cost of groceries, worried about the rising pile of bills they need to pay, worried about coming up short for Christmas. But I bet there isn't a single Canadian losing a single second of sleep worried that a politician in Ottawa may not get a lifetime taxpayer-funded pension. Politicians should use their six-figure salaries, which is about triple that of the average salary of the average Canadian worker, to save for their retirements. Politicians should not try to move a scheduled election so more of them can collect a taxpayer-funded pension for the rest of their lives. It's hard to blame taxpayers for wondering why the government wants to move the election date. The government says it's moving the election to avoid a religious holiday. But the simple fact is that ADMPs aren't eligible for their taxpayer-funded pension until the day after the scheduled election. At minimum, you have to admit that that raises a very important question. Is this really about a religious holiday, or is this really about pension eligibility for dozens of extra politicians? Fortunately, you can put that question to rest. If you want to move the election to avoid a religious holiday, that's fine. There are two simple solutions for you to move the election to avoid a religious holiday without taking millions more from taxpayers. Make the election earlier, or make the pension eligibility date just a little later. Thank you.
Mr. Tirazan, I want to speak to you and ask some questions about this changing of the election date. You made a few different comments, and it's interesting. You're right, the blowback from Canadians has been fast and furious on this. The NDP today, now they start off all of their comments saying that they have nothing to do with this and they're opposed to this now, despite we finding out last week they had secret meetings.
Point of order, Mr. Chair. Point of order.
Okay, we've got a point of order from Ms. Barron here. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Point of order. The member knows full well that there is an amendment that was put forward that the NDP has stood up in the House of Commons.
Thank you, Ms. Barron. I can't accept that as legitimate on a point of order. Perhaps that's something that you and Mr. Duncan can discuss for clarification later, but I can't rule that as being out of order.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is it not a point of order when a member is misconstruing the intentions of another member or information that is false?
Ms. Barron, if you feel strongly about that matter, perhaps what we can do is allow Mr. Duncan to continue. If you hear what you deem to be some form of evasiveness of the truth, you can always raise a point of order again. I can pause briefly and provide a judgment to the committee, but perhaps we can give Mr. Duncan the benefit of the doubt to continue and see where this goes. Are you okay with that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Duncan, I pause the time. There are 5 minutes, 30 seconds remaining. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much. And I don't mind that intervention and point of order because it just shows how desperate the NDP are to separate themselves from the change of the election date when we found out last week that they were involved in exclusive secret meetings with the Prime Minister's office and the Privy Council office, getting briefings and getting information. And they knew full well that the date of the election was going to be changed because this is not an elections bill. This is a pensions bill for NDP and Liberal MPs who were scared of losing their seats and missing out on their pension. So I just will say, Mr. Tarzano, the thing about the date of the election, one of the things we heard last week as well about not being able to move it up because it would interfere and hurt with summer. Do you just want to refute that to say that you think Canadians would be okay with an earlier election, including one that might start even before Labor Day or over the summer? Would that be okay?
Well, thank you very much for your question. And, you know, there's 350 days between now and October the 20th, 2025. 350 days. I have a lot of confidence in everyone in this room that you can figure out one of those 350 days to hold the election. And, like, let's just pretend in some crazy world that it's impossible to hold an election on one of the 350 days between now and October 20th of next year. Okay, there's another simple option, right? Just move the pension eligibility back later.
Well, here's the thing about the summer that came last week and said, oh, well, when we looked at it and decided we couldn't do it during the summer because that's impractical, Labor Day, so it would break summer holidays. Yet it was no problem for the Liberals to call the last election right in the middle of the summer that went over Labor Day. And they had no problem when it was opportunistic for them. But now, when it comes to their pension, they want to move it back the other way by a week, fully in support, obviously, by the NDP, because this bill is part of their coalition agreement.
Go ahead. Yep, Ms. Barron, on a point of order.
Thank you. The member knows full well that the information that he is portraying right now is inaccurate and false. And so I'd ask through you, Mr. Chair, that the member please check his facts. He knows that there's an amendment put forward by the NDP. He knows that what he is saying is inaccurate. And so I ask that the member please speak truth in his words at this committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Barron. I will ask Mr. Duncan to take that under advisement. However, during your round of questioning, of course, there'll be time for you to add the clarity that you feel may be necessary in response to him. Mr. Duncan, I'm going to return the floor to you for about 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
The truth is that the NDP and Liberals work behind the scenes in secret meetings. They were given access to PMO and PCO officials to draft this legislation. It is only after they've been caught out and called out for this being a pension protection program for NDP and Liberal MPs that suddenly they're outraged about it and that they're against it. They're only against it because millions of Canadians and taxpayers spoke out at how ridiculous and self-serving all of this was. I just want to narrow down...
Mr. Speaker?
Yeah, Ms. Barron, on a point of order.
I apologize, Mr. Speaker. I definitely don't want to be interrupting the member when there's false information that's coming forward. It is, of course, my responsibility to Canadians that I am calling it out. I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if it's possible for a point of order for us to clarify if there's an amendment that was put forward to the clerk dated in June that speaks exactly to this item being removed.
So, Ms. Barron, unfortunately, we would be entering into debate at that point. I see Ms. Romanato on the same point of order.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And on that point of order, I do want to say that understanding Order 18 of Order and Decorum, page 12, the behavior using disrespectful language, using offensive words against the member remarks, which question the member's integrity, honesty, or character, are out of order. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Romanato. I'm not sure I heard breach of that particular portion of the standing order. However, I take the point that has been raised by Ms. Barron. And again, I will encourage all members to do their best to present facts as they are engaging in their remarks. So with that, we are going to return the floor to Mr. Duncan, who has about 3 minutes remaining.
The NDP drafted this legislation with the Liberals, and only after it got tabled, only after they got caught and the blowback was so severe that they finally go and say, well, we want to make some changes. It's problematic. Some bills are parts of the bill are problematic. It's problematic for problematic for them because they got caught. And I want to narrow down in here, as Conservatives, we oppose this bill every step of the way for exactly the reasons that we outlined. We're not here for our pensions. We're here for an election now, earlier, sooner rather than later, and we opposed this self-serving move that the Liberals and NDP voted for at second reading, and that's why we're here. I want to use your numbers just to clarify and make sure Canadians are clear on this. With the Liberals and NDP coming together with this bill, both of them voting for it to get it here to committee in the current form, based on the numbers you had said, would I be correct that if the election date was moved back a week, this would be about at least $42 million in a pension guarantee if Liberal and NDP MPs were defeated? Would that be accurate?
It depends on, obviously, the results of the election, but it would be accurate to say that if you delay the election by 1 week, right, without moving the pension eligibility like we recommend, that this would cost taxpayers tens of millions of dollars in extra pensions for politicians, correct?
And I have at least, $42 million for the dozens of Liberal and NDP MPs that would qualify, including a quarter of the NDP caucus, just for the record as well. So now we know, again, this is a key part of their coalition agreement. They've said as much in public that this was a core part of their coalition deal that they had amongst each other, and now we know why, because it's not about adding a couple of advance poll voting days. It's not about foreign interference and combating and closing loopholes, because we've heard from several witnesses as the bill that they proposed together, there still are many loopholes that exist and are not not filled that way. So I think at the end of the day, when we go back to this, I think a key part of this is the NDP were complicit the entire time. From an appropriateness perspective, do you think that it's appropriate when we're changing elections laws or doing these types of pieces of legislation, particularly changing election rules and details, the date of the election, do you think it's appropriate for one party to be given access to the Prime Minister's office and Privy Council office briefings while the Bloc Québécois and Conservatives are shut out, not knowing anything about it?
Well, I'm not going to weigh into the partisan situation. I'll just keep it very brief. But if the government wants to prove that this is about avoiding a religious holiday and not about more pensions for more politicians, either make the election earlier or make a pension eligibility later.
My next question is to Mr. Terrazano. My understanding is you are a registered third party for elections. Is that correct?
We do not register.
Okay. I receive many emails from you. You're pretty prolific in reaching out to elected officials, to the public, certainly appreciate the role you play along with other organizations. I'm just wondering, and it's the issue of transparency in elections, in your communications. You believe that's an important principle in terms of communicating with publics and politicians?
Well, I really appreciate your question. I'm not sure what that has to do specifically about the government delaying the bill to give more politicians a pension, but of course I believe that the government should be transparent with taxpayers.
Right. So you are a donor-funded organization, is that correct?
Again, I appreciate the question and happy to answer it. I will note that I do find it interesting that you're changing the subject away from the government delaying the election, which would give millions in pensions to dozens of politicians. I'm not sure how our organization fits in with that bill.
The election law that we are discussing today has broad application, as you know. I'm just wondering, my understanding is that you do not publish your list of donors. Is that correct? And will you be publishing your list of donors so that we can know who funds your organization?
Thank you again for your question about our donors. I will say that that is the third question that has nothing to do with the government delaying the bill delaying the election to give millions in pensions to dozens of politicians. To directly answer your question, we will always respect the privacy of our donors, and I'm very proud to do so. And speaking of, you know, hundreds of thousands of Canadians, I think they would just want to know what your answer is to why not just make the election earlier or push the pension eligibility later.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank the witness for not answering my question. Thank you.
I heard your opening remarks, Mr. Terrano. The Bloc Québécois is against postponing or changing the election's date. In your opening remarks, you said that there are things underlying the decision, and what are those elements that you mentioned that are the reasons for the change of the election date?
So thank you so much for your question. I apologize, my French is not so good. I do need to work on that. So I appreciate your question, and you know, I'll give kudos to the Bloc and to the NDP and to the Conservatives. It's my understanding that all three parties are against delaying the election to give pensions to more politicians. So kudos to you. I would like to give kudos eventually to every MP on this committee, because I hope you will do the right thing and either make the election earlier or make the pension eligibility later. With respect to, I believe, motivations behind it, well, I think there is a perception among the public that they're delaying the election to give millions in pensions to politicians that don't deserve it. Now, I don't think that's the perception. I hope that all MPs on this committee will do the right thing, that we're able to give kudos to all MPs on this committee, and instead of giving millions in pensions to politicians who don't deserve it, that the committee comes forward with two very reasonable solutions to just make the election earlier or move the pension eligibility later.
If I understand you well, there's no other argument to support this decision to postpone the elections. Is that what you're saying? There are no other reasons, other reasonable reasons to explain that?
So if the government allows the election to be delayed and end up with dozens of politicians who take a taxpayer-funded pension when they shouldn't have to, if the government lets that happen, then it will be about pensions, and that they will have proven that it's about pensions for politicians. Because there's two simple solutions to avoid a religious holiday, right? And those two simple solutions are make the election earlier or make pension eligibility just a little bit later.
That's exactly what I wanted to say. We talked about voter turnout, we talked about accessibility, but by postponing it to the 27th, it's not about avoiding Diwali with all the opportunities voters will have to exercise their franchise. One additional day or one day less doesn't change anything. So I will not make any suppositions, but I think there are other reasons This is one of the issues that is important for the Bloc Québécois. Secularism should prevail over religious grounds. That is very important for us. And what we are realizing, and this ties in with what you are saying, that though we are deciding to change the date, it's not changing anything when it comes to voter turnout. So there could be other reasons for the change. So let me come back to the same question. I think, as you said, Diwali is not a valid reason because other things could be done. So that does not affect voter turnout and would not change the date. The elections could still hold on the 20th of October. Is that correct?
It's just not believable that there isn't one of the next 350 days between now and October 20th. It's just not believable that there isn't a day that you can't have an election, right? And let's just say that it's impossible to have an election on one of those 350 days between now and October 20th of next year. Then all the government would have to do to make sure this isn't about giving politicians a pension who should not get one is just change the eligibility date for those pensions.
Very quickly, I just want to ask a question to Mr. Terrazano, and I hope that we can get through it very quickly because there are many other questions I want to ask. And in my opinion, we spent way too much time on something that's easily resolved. Just to clarify, on May the 30th, 2024, Mr. Terrazano, did you write, and I quote, "All MPs must vote against pushing back the federal election, and the NDP deserves credit for announcing plans to amend the legislation and scrap the delay."
It sounds like something I would have said. It sounds way better when you say it than when I do, though.
Why, thank you, Mr. Terrazano. I appreciate that. And so we did put for an amendment to resolve this issue. And so just to clarify, with an amendment that returns this date back to the original date, do your concerns remain? Legitimate concerns remain?
Sorry, if it goes back to October 20th?
If this clause that was put into the bill was no longer in the bill, that moved the election date, which rightfully so provided pensions to MPs who did not deserve them, I agree with you that this is not the time to be talking about MPs' pensions. If that were to be removed, would this issue be resolved?
The only issue the Canadian Taxpayers Federation has, granted we're not an expert on all these other issues, if you do not give more pensions to those politicians, then you solve the issue and I don't have to be here today.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I look forward to hearing from all members their response to the amendments once we get into that section of this debate. And I hope, Mr. Terrazano, that you are happy with the responses from MPs at that time.
Mr. Terrazano, from the Taxpayers Federation, there was a survey that you published in February talking about what Canadians think about this one-week postponement. Could you tell us more about the results of that survey?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I believe you're referring to a Léger poll, right? A national Léger poll. And the poll shows that 63% of Canadians are against delaying the election to secure pensions for extra MPs. When you remove the undecideds, 80% of Canadians are against this. So it's not just the Canadian Taxpayers Federation that is against this. It's not just the Conservatives who've spoken out, the NDP who've spoken out, the Bloc who've spoken out. The vast majority of Canadians are against this, including people who vote for every party.
There you go, Mr. Terrazano. It's clear. The NDP started talking against the postponement by a week. When? In June, from what Ms. Byron just said, immediately after publication of the Léger survey, when they saw the reaction, the very negative reaction from Canadians. Mr. Bertold, there's a call to order.
Unfortunately, Mr. Duncan, all points of order.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Until I hear what they're about. Ms. Barron, go ahead. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask for some clarification. My name is being directly quoted here, and I don't think the facts are actually straight on that around when this came forward. I was in the House of Commons standing in May, as well as the timing of this amendment coming forward in June. So there are some facts that perhaps the member can review his information before
thank
making
you, Ms.
accusations.
Barron. We're entering into debate. Should there be an issue with the ascribing of testimony, we'll make sure that we get that corrected for the record. I didn't hear, and I don't have those original documents in front of me, so I can't comment at the moment.
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, I do not have all the information the NDP is talking about. All I know, let me start. You have the floor for 2 minutes, 30 seconds. Me neither. All I know is that the scenario is plausible. Mr. Terrazano, if the other opposition parties vote along with us for us to replace this government before the 27th of February, you will be saving another pension, that of the leader of the NDP, who will be getting to 6 years of service in February. So maybe we need to go fast and make more others.
Ms. Barron, on a point of order.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, for the interruption. I was just hoping that we could find some relevancy to the information that's being provided right now and how it actually relates to this bill. I don't feel it is relevant. Thank you.
On this point of
thank
order.
You, Ms. Barron. I'm not hearing anything from Ms. Huberta that is veering outside of the realm of relevance.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was simply responding to one of the questions, one of the assertions that were made by Mr. Terrazano, who said that every pension that could be avoided to be given in advance to an MP should not be given. So I was simply clarifying that there was an additional pension. So that's the point I was trying to make.
Mr. Terrazano, I just wanted you to know that on August 15, 2021, the Prime Minister called an election for September 20th, 2021, which was just shy of a month that anyone elected in 2015 that did not win their election would not be eligible. So this was not a fixed election date. If the Prime Minister wanted to allow four members of Parliament to get their pension, he could have called that election for a month later, and it would have happened. Just so you know, when the amendment is brought forward, when we are at clause by clause, I will be supporting keeping the election date on October 20th. So my question to you is, have you read the rest of the bill, and is there any comments that you have?
Yeah, my initial comment is when you vote to keep the election date where it is, and I hope everyone in the committee either votes to keep the election date where it is, or votes to have the election earlier, or votes to extend the pension eligibility later. If everyone does that, I'll give you, we'll put out a news release, and we'll
I don't need a gold star. I'm asking, do you have any questions, any feedback about the rest of the bill? It's 48 pages long. Do you have anything else to add to the bill?
Our concern is the pensions and the cost of taxpayers.
Thank you very much to witnesses who made themselves available today. And with that, colleagues, the meeting is adjourned.